Okay, I think we're ready, Esther. Good morning. This is Commissioner Susan Wefald, and the North Dakota Public Service Commission is meeting today for its regular meeting. Today is June 4th, 2008. The commission is meeting today in the 12th floor of the State Capitol Building here in Bismarck, North Dakota, in our commission hearing room. With me are my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Tony Clark and Commissioner Kevin Kramer. Any welcoming comments, Commissioner Clark?
Welcome. Good morning. It's June 4th. The Cubs have the best record in baseball, which is the first time that's happened to start the month of June since 1908, the last time they won the World Series.
Okay.
Good morning.
Glad to have the update. All right. Commissioner Kramer.
Good morning and welcome. The Twins are just a little over 500, but they play in the major leagues. With that, I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second. We're still busy thinking about the baseball issues.
I moved right along.
All right. Moving right along.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. Now that we've got that tough motion over with, we'll go to the rest of the agenda.
I was thinking about voting against that.
SW1. I move the commission adopt the order designating the Midwest Renewable Energy Tracking System, MRETS, as the program administrator responsible for tracking, recording, and verifying the transactions associated with certificates and credits for electricity generated from renewable electricity sources, case number PU07318. This relates to wind companies and, well, not only wind companies, but it also relates to any type of renewable generation. And it relates to companies that choose to purchase that power and to make sure that it isn't double counted when they apply it to, quote, renewable energy standards or renewable energy goals that are set by states. On July 13th, APEX filed a letter with the commission requesting that the commission designate it as program administrator of a Midwest Renewable Energy Tracking System, MRETS. And then on August 8, 2007, the commission held an informal hearing on this matter. And on February 27th, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. And the issue to be considered is whether the commission should designate MRETS as program administrator. The commission has rules that it set forth under state law that said that the commission could set up a program to track renewable energy credits in the state of North Dakota. As part of that rulemaking, it said that we needed to designate a program administrator. MRETS tracks renewable generation located within our state and provincial boundaries of Iowa, Manitoba, Minnesota, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. It also tracks renewable resource credits for the state of Wisconsin. And the state of Wisconsin has been running the MRETS program now for about a year, and they awarded a four-year contract for implementation, operation, and administration of the MRETS program to APEX on April 5th, 2007. In this order, the commission is designating MRETS as the program administrator, which is responsible for doing these things. MRETS has policies, practices, and protocols in place to accomplish these goals. MRETS is still working on governance issues. If any intractable governance or functionality issues arise, the commission will reconsider this decision. And so the commission is ordering that MRETS, presently using APX as its system administrator, is a designated program administrator under North Dakota Administrative Code, Chapter 690908, for the purpose of tracking, recording, and verifying the transactions associated with certificates and credits for electricity generated from renewable electricity sources, as defined by North Dakota Century Code 490225 among electric generators, utilities, and other interested entities within this state and similar entities in other states. And there are certain things that they have to do to comply with our rules, and those are also listed in our order on this matter. This gives, by the commission making this designation, companies can voluntarily sign up with MRETS to register their renewable programs and to ensure that they are counted correctly. Under another section of state law, it says that we have a renewable energy goal in this state, and that companies are required to file with the commission what progress they have made toward that renewable energy goal. And it also said that any resources that they list under that goal have to be approved or registered with the administrator of a credit tracking program that the commission designates. So the commission is taking care of this now because that reporting to the commission starts in 1 year.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, and then we go to Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. KC1, I move the commission issue a siting application fee interim refund to Enbridge Pipelines Southern Lights LLC in the amount of $92,895.58, case number PU0775. This motion, along with the next three, are all interim refund motions, and what that means is that we are refunding the bulk of the siting application fee that the companies had to pay to the commission to help compensate the commission for its costs in permitting the corridor certificates and route permits for various, in this case, all of them being pipelines. You might recall that previous to a recent legislative session, the siting fee was paid to the commission, went into the general fund, and then any unused portion of it was not returned, but rather went straight into the general fund like a tax. The law was changed at the commission's request to both lower the siting fee as well as then place it into a special fund that the commission would have access to for using to go through the siting process, and then after which it would be any addition would be refunded or any balance would be refunded. In the case of Enbridge Southern Lights, and by the way, just as a point of reference or of information, the formula for siting fees for corridor certificates and route permits is $5,000 per $1 million expected investment. So with a cap of $100,000, in the case of Enbridge Southern Lights, as well as the next one, of course, the cap was reached. Enbridge Southern Lights was a $31.5 million expected investment, thus their filing fee was $100,000. The interim refund is a refund of the balance remaining minus $5,000. We hang on to $5,000 for any expenses that might be incurred through the next couple of years as we monitor tree and shrub recovery and tree and shrub mitigation, make sure that 75% of all the trees that were planted survive and those kinds of things. So in this case, $92,895.58 is being returned to Enbridge. $5,000 will be retained by the commission for any work that might continue in the next couple of years.
Every now and then, government has foresight. Usually it's state government, not the federal government. But this is one of those times when it seems like government did have some foresight, knowing what was coming in the energy development or the energy industry and the development that was going to be taking place in North Dakota. As Commissioner Kramer said, a few years ago, the commission saw this coming, and we saw really what was kind of a unmanageable siting fee process that we had. And in the past, when you'd have energy booms, development booms, and these siting fees were paid, it was just kind of this windfall that government got. But I can tell you as a legislator, it wasn't something you could budget on because you didn't know what projects were coming year to year. You didn't know if the income would be zero or significantly more than that. So it just sort of resided in the general fund. The commission during times when there were a lot of siting cases didn't have access to the money, so we couldn't hire consultants on to help process the cases. It wasn't good for industry because industry obviously has an interest in the commission being able to handle these in an expeditious and in a fair manner, and so we set up this mechanism where the commission could use the money to actually cite the cases that come before us. Industry got the advantage of having a process that was more workable, and at the end of the day, if we didn't spend the money, they got the money back. The rest of state government really wasn't out anything because they weren't planning on budgeting on it, anyway, so it seems to be a win-win. And for the people in North Dakota, they get a regulatory regime that simply works better because we have access to more resources to be able to do these in a thorough and timely manner.
Not having to go to the Industrial Commission every time, you might need a little extra money from that fund is a tremendous savings. The Emergency Commission. God forbid that we have to go to the Industrial Commission. To the Emergency Commission is this. In fact, I was thinking about this just recently. All of the work that our siting folks, our PUD folks, have had to do recently. If they had that additional burden, I can't even imagine getting it done, quite honestly. And hopefully, the companies appreciate it as well. It should be noted, however, that in the very rare event, that the, say, $100,000 isn't enough in a big case that requires a lot of work and a lot of expense, we do also have the ability to, with the consent of the Emergency Commission, ask for more money from the company, up to, I think, what's the cap, Pat, 10% of the entire filing fee, something like that, the entire investment. So it's significant. 10,000 per million. So just take as an example, Keystone TransCanada, we would have the opportunity, if necessary, the authority at least, to go to the Emergency Commission and request up to $2.77 million to continue work on siting the Keystone pipeline. So,
which is purely a hypothetical. All right.
It's a hypothetical that becomes more real every day.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks. Okay. The next three are similar. KC2. I move the commission issue a siting application fee interim refund to Enbridge Energy Limited Partnership in the amount of $92,895.58, case number PU07108.
Second.
Again, this is Enbridge Alberta Clipper. This was a $63.5 million investment.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. KC3. I move the commission issue a siting application fee interim refund to Dakota Gasification Company in the amount of $47,141.52, case number PU07184.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC4. I move the commission issue a siting application fee interim refund to Belle Fouche Pipeline Company in the amount of $42,348.71, case number PU07596.
And I'll second this one.
All in favor.
Aye.
Aye.
We probably shouldn't bulk put all these together because some appropriator will see all that money going out the door at once. And
fortunately, they see a lot of oil income coming in the same door. Mm-hmm.
Plus, if the media hits a slow news time, each of these could be an individual story.
Yeah, right. Well, they do have some regional, impacts.
Four-part series.
Yeah, four-part series. All right, I have one more motion. On the other side of the equation, KC5, I move the commission adopt the order granting certificates of corridor compatibility and route permits in Enbridge Pipelines North Dakota LLC's application to upgrade pump stations, case number PU07791.
Second.
As you will recall, actually in December, we received the letter of intent and then followed up, of course, by the application from Enbridge to increase the capacity of the Enbridge North Dakota transmission line or transportation line from northwestern North Dakota to Clearbrook, Minnesota. The upgrades are to existing pump stations. There are actually 11 pump stations along that route that are being upgraded or are being proposed to be upgraded. Most of them, the vast majority of them, were sited originally just a couple of years earlier to upgrade the same pipeline. This particular proposal was to increase the capacity of the Enbridge system by 51,000 barrels per day. As we all know, North Dakota producers were suffering discounted prices, heavy apportionment on that line. As the dramatic increase in production continues, the ability to get it out of North Dakota and into the marketplace was severely constrained by the pipelines. And so hearing that cry from producers, Enbridge has chosen to invest heavily in the North Dakota system. We did issue a notice of opportunity on these 11 station upgrades and received a request for a hearing from a homeowner in Penn, near the Penn Station. So consequently, that hearing has been scheduled for June 20th, and that one station upgrade is not part of this order. The other 10 all are. We held an informal with the company on those 10 upgrades. With the exception of just Beaver Lodge, all of the upgrades are on existing land owned by the company. They're basically additional pumps, additional equipment to go along with those pumps, of course, drag-reducing agents, skids, and in some cases some buildings and control equipment. So everything seems to be in order. Again, June 20th we'll have the formal hearing, at least it's scheduled for now, in the Ramsey County Courthouse on the Penn Station.
I'm not certain whether the media has a copy of this.
It is on the table. Yeah.
But Penn is listed on as a facility in that first paragraph, and it should not be.
Yeah, on the fact sheet it is. In the order, you'll notice it is not. I left out the fact sheet and the order.
It was applied for, but it is.
Yep, it's part of the siting application. So
this is a major league investment, but North Dakota has been facing a major league challenge with the supply constraints that we've had. And, you know, we continue to hear about, and it's a reality. The Bakken play is real, and there's a lot more activity there than I think anybody had probably expected even a few years ago. And I don't have the running total anymore. Maybe somebody in the room does, but you had this 100 and close to 20 million on top of the many tens of million that Enbridge has already put into that particular pipeline system, and it's making a difference in alleviating that supply constraint. But with the amount of oil that they're talking about, you know, potentially there may be more upgrades, not just on Enbridge, but certainly on other systems as well.
This is a very significant increase in this pipeline capacity from 110,000 barrels a day to 161,600 barrels per day. It's increasing it by almost over 50% capacity, and so that's very good for the pipeline system in North Dakota.
You know, as good as that is, when you consider that 2 years ago they upgraded it to add another 45,000, it's more than doubled the Enbridge output and capacity in the last 2 years. Helping to meet that demand from the Bakken play, as well as alleviate the discounting, hopefully, and the apportionment that is taking place. You know, the other part of this formula, of course, is refinery capacity, because that's the other part of the constraint, is that there is a lack of capacity in the Midwest. There's plenty of capacity to handle U.S. oil, but when you throw in the vast amounts of Canadian oil into that system, we need some more refining capacity as well. But I applaud Enbridge for their investment, and they're certainly doing their part to this point, certainly to alleviate those constraints. So I appreciate that.
All in favor?
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio.
And we'll go next to Commissioner Clark.
I have one item in my portfolio. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in Mid-Continent Communications Interconnection Arbitration Application, case number PU0897.
Second.
This issues a notice of hearing. It'll be heard before an arbitrator on August 1st, 2008, starting at 10 a.m. here in the commission hearing room. The arbitrator's decision will then be forwarded to the commission, which the commission can either accept, reject, or modify. There are a number of issues that will be determined as part of this arbitration proceeding between Mid-Continent, which is a cable company, as we all know, providing phone service, and Consolidated Communications, which operates primarily in the southwest part of the state. Issue number one deals with last-mile providers. Issue number two deals with pricing. Issue number three deals with common carrier representations. Issue number four deals with intellectual property. Number five with franchise reporting and fees. Number six relates to their operations handbooks. Number seven, network interface devices. Number eight, service orders. Number nine, coordinating cutovers. Number 10, 911 trunks. Number 11, foreign exchange service. And number 12, co-location. So you can see that on any of these interconnection issues that are hammered out between companies, in which the commission ultimately approves, there are a number of technical matters that take place. And sometimes in an era of competition where we've kind of become used to being able to have multiple phone providers, we forget how much work goes on behind the scenes when we have moved from a telephone system, which was truly just one monopoly. It was probably the most monopolized of any of the utilities that were operating and continue to operate, to one where there's many providers in a marketplace. There are a lot of details behind the scenes and things that need to happen to make that work.
Mid-Continent, this is just a continuation of Mid-Continent's efforts to provide local telephone service as well as other services to customers all across the state of North Dakota. They have made a significant impact on, as a competitor in this state, on telecommunications services. In this particular instance, they're trying to work out issues now to be able to provide services down in the southwest part of the state, where they have been able to work out interconnection applications such as this. They have been able to compete quite well in those areas. So it's been an interesting process to watch Mid-Continent move forward with their efforts.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio.
Okay, I don't think there's anything else on the agenda. We have the formal hearings the commission has scheduled are in our notice that we've put out. But there's just one thing that I would like to comment on. My fellow commissioners have commented on baseball scores. I'm going to comment on something that's been going on at our house, I want to first tell you that this does not relate to the commission's jurisdiction, all right? But it is something that the commission is watching with interest. And, for example, I do not have cable television, and so I need to buy converter boxes in order to be able to take advantage, be able to watch TV as of next January 1, because all of the companies have to go to digital broadcasting. So Bob and I made a decision that we would apply for two of the certificates that were available from the federal government help us purchase the equipment, the converter boxes that would enable us to still be able to watch TV. So we did this spring, and it took about 2 months, and we received those certificates, and in Bob went, and we had to pay additional dollars then in order to get those converter boxes. All right, so then he promptly installed these on our television sets, and this is what he found, that ABC and Fox are not yet broadcasting digital. So, therefore, when you install your converter box, at the present time, these are the stations that now we can watch. I can watch three PBS stations. I can watch CBS and NBC. So I have but I will not be able to receive ABC and Fox until they convert to digital, which will be sometime between now and January 1. So I thought the whole process is so interesting. And what I also thought is so interesting, you know, you talk to people and you think you're the only ones who don't have cable television, and so you're the only ones who need to go through this process. But the federal government received millions and millions of requests for these converter boxes that people are needing to install before January 1. But that's one family story now of the saga of the conversion to digital and how it's affecting families and their TV watching. All right, the commission will now take questions.
Would you guys use the mic, please?
Yes, it helps people because then they can.
Well, you answered one question for me that you're not bundled.
No, I'm not.
Are you?
I am.
Did you have the outage last week?
I did not. I heard about it. I mean, I may have, but not that I know of.
Yeah, I was just curious as to.
Listen, Dave, I don't answer my phone at home if it rings anyway. So. Don't call me at home. Call my cell phone.
Okay. No, would the commission have any authority to take a look at what happened there with the switch failing for 8 hours?
I suppose if there was a complaint filed with the commission that we would have an opportunity to address it.
It was a significant
I suspect
outage.
We would. I mean, it's dealing with essential services. Alon is not sure.
The competition's all about. But.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. She's singing my tune.
In terms of the refunds that
I'm off the grid. It didn't affect me.
Okay.
Living in
you're just a cell person.
That's right.
In terms of the in terms of the refunds that you call them interim refunds.
Right. The interim part is because we hang on to $5,000 for any incidental costs, you know, over the course of the next couple of years as we monitor the tree and shrub survival rate. There might be other things, but largely it's the tree and shrub survival rate. When the Forest Service and Pat Fawn are satisfied, they get the rest of the money.
Okay. Okay.
And actually, Pat's not satisfied till the Forest Service is. So.
So may I ask how much money the commission has spent in the Keystone case in terms of...
You know, we actually, I don't have that right in front of me, but I think we've spent, as you put it, somewhere right around or just over $30,000. However, we have not yet, we have not yet signed a contract with a third-party inspector, which I anticipate that, along with other costs, will very likely use up the bulk, if not all, of the balance.
Victor, aren't we talking about that on admin?
We are talking about it on admin. That's correct.
This... on your consent agenda about a couple of the grain buyers being canceled out.
Tony does that all the time.
Is that, is that something that you guys are seeing a lot of? Is that the ethanol companies hurting or?
Well, no, it's not so much ethanol companies hurting. The roving grain buyers giving up their license is it's not an infrequent event. I mean, just the nature of the business is such that especially with the non-facilities-based grain buyers, they may come in for one season and operate because they happen to have a couple of customers here, and then, you know, the customers go somewhere else, and so they just choose not to get licensed. Although, you know, it wouldn't shock me if we saw perhaps a little bit more of that, just because with commodity prices as high as they are, you know, it's starting to become a little bit of a high-risk poker game. And for small, you know, for smaller operators, which oftentimes roving grain buyers are, you know, you're playing with the big boys when you're looking at the money that is on the table here, and if you get into, you know, margin calls and things like that. So, you know, certainly the entire issue of grain elevator licensing and the exposure that farmers potentially have in this era of, it's not $20 wheat anymore, but it's still pretty high relative to recent trends is something that the commission takes seriously. In fact, last commission meeting on the admin, we spoke about putting together some sort of working group with both our staff and the agricultural group representatives to talk about this very issue. Do our grain licensing laws meet the reality of today's marketplace, and is there something that we should be preparing for and doing differently heading into a legislative session when we have a chance to potentially address some of the concerns.
But I guess I'm getting, there hasn't been any torrent of these. These are just things that occasionally come and go that
no,
you're seeing.
No, okay. not that I've noticed. And Sue's in the back, too. Anything unusual that you've noticed?
No. Commissioner, there is nothing unusual. The other thing to keep in mind is we are going into a renewal right now, which is often the time when we see elevators close their doors. So.
Anything else?
Yeah, the Empower things were... The SW2 were pulled off the agenda?
Yes, they were. And the reason for that is that they're still determining what date can work best for them for their hearings. And the commission's determining what date then we need to have this on an agenda in order to be able to meet the correct notice requirements. The commission may schedule a special meeting next week, or we may hold this to the next meeting depending on the date that they've set. That's it's administrative issues.
And I suppose you're watching with some interest the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission.
Yes, we are. We understand that they make their decision, I believe it's today?
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. Okay.
They heard it yesterday, isn't it?
Yes.
One of your fellow commissioners in South Dakota has weighed in basically saying that PUC in Minnesota should approve the power line. Have you thought about weighing in,
Well, they
comments?
They have finished their case. And so they have finished that case a while back, and therefore I think it was appropriate for them to support their decision before the Public Utilities Commission. Our commission's in a different situation. We're in the middle of that case. We understand that the Industrial Commission sent in some comments on this, and so, but that's the reason our commission did not.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I just draw attention to one other item on the consent agenda because it is a little bit different than some of the others. The commission has entered a contract with the same law firms that we've worked with in the past and representing the commission and state interests before the Surface Transportation Board. It's not before the board. It's before the federal courts. But it's related to a Surface Transportation Board decision on the methodology for filing different types of rate cases. As you all know, the commission's been very active with regard to grain shipping matters and representing state interests before federal regulators. The STB came out with a new methodology for calculating how those particular types of cases are filed, and we believe, as well as really I think almost unanimously amongst shipper groups and those who utilize the railroad, that the new methodology would preclude a number of cases being filed just because of the thresholds that are sent in, are set in that rulemaking. The shipper groups and certainly those of us on the commission, as well as a number of other North Dakota-based ag groups, believe that we really need to appeal those, and so that process is going forward. There are a lot of parties to this. We're all being represented by the same law firms, and so the contract that we're entering, the $5,000 that we're paying, is our share of the cost.
And this goes back to the idea of the small shipper case that you're hoping to bring.
Right, that's exactly right. The rules that were on the books a few years ago were much more favorable, we thought, to bringing a small shipper rate complaint case, and the value was always the precedent that you had set. Well, after they changed the rules, you don't get the value of any precedent. You would have potentially won the one case, but it wouldn't make any difference for future cases. Now they've changed the rules a bit. They stratified the types of filings that you would make into three separate types of filings. One would be for very large shippers, one would be for the smallest, and one would be for the medium-sized shipments. We believe that the thresholds that they've set for where you would file and the potential rate recovery that you'd get in each of those particular types of cases precludes the type of case that we would be bringing from a North Dakota perspective, and really not just North Dakota, but other types of shippers, industrial shippers, small and medium-sized shippers.
The only clarifying thing I'd say, Dave, is that I don't know that we were, speaking for myself, I don't know that I was ever hoping we would bring a case to the STB, but rather the way it's turned out to this point is to divert the railroads themselves from such high rates. And so to that end, I think we've been successful.
It had a beneficial effect.
Anything else?
So who are you rooting for? Is it going to be Pittsburgh Penguins or Detroit Red Wings?
I'm rooting for the Red Wings. With my family ties to Michigan, I've kind of always been a Red Wings fan. So I'm sure Susan is, too.
She's got Detroit.
I could care less.
Okay, and with that, we'll close this portion of the meeting. You'll notice we have a very long administrative agenda before us today. Lots of things to set dates for. Okay.